months has passed since the Iranian government implemented its subsidy reform plan, a massive undertaking likened to a surgical procedure by those who finally made the first incision. Everyone was aware of the magnitude and inevitable side effects of the task, one being price hikes that would pressure the nation but relieve the government of an annual multi-billion dollar subsidy payout that the Iranian nation has been receiving for decades. In the year and a half that has passed, the government has begun redirecting the subsidies away from fuel and food, but given each Iranian citizen a monthly cash handout to buffer the initial shock of the price hikes. Then, 15 months later, only a few days before the 20th of March 2012, the Iranian New Year, the government started signaling the beginning of the second phase of the reform plan. Up to this point, every Iranian, whether rich or poor, was getting 45,000 tuman a month. That can buy about 11 kilos of rice, the Iranian staple. As part of the new phase, that amount was to increase by 28,000, but this time, not for everyone. The rich would be asked to voluntarily forfeit the extra amount. 3 weeks into the new year, certain people got a text message informing them that they were among the 10 million that were being asked to do just that. The text message forewarned that the second phase of subsidy reform had begun. But the government is facing opposition where price hikes are concerned. In this program, we'll be looking at the goals achieved by the first phase of the reform plan and what's planned for the second phase. The subsidy reform plan is part of Iran's economic reform plan that was approved in February 2008 and is supposed to be realized by 2015. Among other things, the plan demands taxes replace oil as the government's main source of revenue. The plan provides for reform in seven main economic zones: the distribution of subsidies, in the banking system, in the goods and services distribution system, the value of Iran's currency, reform in the level of efficiency in Iran's economy and the country's tax and customs systems. The government is taking subsidy reform very seriously and ploughing ahead with it despite the obstacles. But why is subsidy reform such a crucial element of the economic overhaul the government is aiming for?
All Iranian economists unanimously believed that the price of energy carriers in Iran was in need of reforms, and international economic reports testify to that. Firstly, because of the adverse impact it had had on Iran's economic growth, and secondly, because of the unfair distribution of subsidies in the public sector. So the government's intervention and getting the subsidies law approved in parliament was the right thing to do, and I think maybe this should have happened much earlier. The government scores important victories as a result of a rise in prices, which led to a decline in consumption and as a result of a steep decrease in the smuggling of energy carriers. It also succeeded in controlling the public's expectations of inflation upon the implantation of the subsidy law.
The substantial chunk the annual budget was allocating to the subsidies was being criticized more and more every day. The government redirected a percentage of the subsidies given to fuel and food. But as part of the aftermath, critics say the pushing up of prices shouldn't have happened so suddenly.
Because the reform in prices of energy carriers didn't take place at the pace envisioned by the law, in other words, because it didn't happen slowly and gradually, and because the government took big steps at the beginning of the implementation of the law, Naturally, the different segments of the economy and the general public felt more pressure than what had predicted by the legislation. In order to compensate for the increased financial pressure on the people, especially on the households and consumers, I put cash accumulated as a result of the targeted subsidy plan directly into the people's bank accounts.
The plan was for the entire nation to be divided into different tiers based on their income and assets, and for each tier to receive compensation accordingly, the rich less and the poor more. But in the end, due to insufficient information and the sheer scale of the project and its aftershocks, everyone started receiving an equal amount, regardless of their financial status. But some say that just won't do.
The purpose is for the subsidies to be paid to the middle and lower class families. But since Iran is a democratic country, all groups from the parliament to the government to others weigh on important issues, and the summation of their discussions become law. The outcome of all the discussions was that cash payments be paid to seven tiers of society, while it should only include maximum five or six. But since the law didn't specifically say anything about that, the government thought it could pay seven tiers. They even paid Iranians living abroad, people who never had any use for our subsidies because they live in a different country. So the whole society was included in the plan, which to me was one of its flaws.
The government vowed to allocate the money it redirected away from fuel and food to empowering Iran's industrial sector, domestic manufacturers and producers.
The production section of the national economy, which had been forced to a structure because of the increase in prices, received very little support, much less than what had been allotted to them in the budget law. As a result, they haven't been able to make the structural changes envisioned by the law.
خودشون رو تکنولوژی خودشون رو و اون اهداف مد نظر قانون رو تو بخش اقتصاد تولید در واقع محقق کنند
برای بخش تولید باید یه راهکار مناسب اقتصادی
The government should have thought of an appropriate economic approach predicted on economic theories for the production sector. But no agreement was made on that because of a lack of the requisite economic knowledge among the decision makers. This should have been done by paying subsidies to producers who renewed their investments. In other words, this could have been an incentive to producers who used energy-efficient technology.
من مثلا 50-70% سرمایه‌گذاری رو میدم.
In an interview we had with the head of Iran's subsidy reform plan organization about a month ago, Mr. Behrouz Moradi said the government isn't just helping industries financially, it's supporting them in many other ways as well.
They think we should make cash payments to factories, manufacturers and others in the production sector, just as we do to households. But that's neither allowed by the law, nor is that illogical or wise thing to do. We have all three kinds of cooperation, discriminatory and preferential price margins, interest subsidy payments, meaning if they give loans with 16-20% interest rates, we agree the loan taker pay 12-14% of the interest themselves, and we pay the rest for them. And if we are giving a free loan, we do it only for the following, to keep the competitiveness of business that produce the same product in the country.
The subsidy reform plan has brought about great change, a lot of which the government deems as progress. Fuel prices went up and the government gave subsidies for fuel. Before subsidy reform, 120 million litres of petrol was being consumed in Iran daily. Then the government rationed petrol, giving each person a specific amount monthly. The amount of petrol consumed daily dropped to 62.8 million litres. But after subsidy reform, it dropped even more to 59.3 million litres a day. Consequently, $38 billion have been saved in about 2 years. More importantly, Iran has become self-sufficient in producing petrol and countered the embargo on Iranian petrol imports. And that's not all.
We have experienced a successful example of a plan like that in the world. It was praised by the IMF and the World Bank too. Its outcome and signs can be seen in three areas. The developments made in the production sector, the welfare it provided to households, and the last one, which is very important too, is cutting down on consumption.
Now that the first phase of the subsidy reform plan has been implemented, what can the government learn from how it managed the reform and how things eventually panned out?
The lessons you learn at the beginning of doing something can really help you determine what you want to do next. We've been able to minimize the harms of our extensive non-targeted subsidy payments and boost support for the industrial and agricultural sectors. Of course, for that to happen, you need to have at least some level of economic stability to enable the policymaker to carry out their plan.
In the last 3 months since the beginning of the new year, government and parliament have been at odds over the way the subsidy reform plan should be implemented. The government says fuel prices must go up, but parliament wants to delay the price hikes. Parliament Speaker Ali Larijani wrote a letter to the leader Ayatollah Khamenei asking him to intervene and prevent the second phase from being fully implemented. And he explained why he did this in an open session.
If the parliament isn't sure about the second phase of the targeted subsidy plan, it's because it wants to see an improvement in the production industry, in employment, and the containment of inflation and skyrocketing prices, and also because it wants decided what's in the best interest of the nation through expert consultations and identifying the defects of the first phase. The government's recent decision to increase cash payments to households is not only a blatant violation of the law and damaging in our current economic situation, but it's also going to worsen inflation.
Government and parliament held meeting after meeting, and the issue was also referred to the Higher Council for Settling Disputes Between Branches of Power. This council was formed by the leader Ayatollah Khamenei based on Article 110 of the Constitution. This article gives the leader the responsibility of settling issues between the branches of power. Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmoud Hashemi Shahroudi is the head of the council.
When a law is written, some part of it may be subject to interpretation, and that's why the government calls on the parliament to explain it. The same is true about this law. The government wanted to do it based on its own interpretation of the law, but the parliament wasn't of the same opinion. So that's how the dispute started. Both the government and the parliament are pursuing the same targets, but their strategies are different. They had differences over the powers of the government laid out by the subsidy law, which was resolved by the Higher Council for Settling Disputes Between Branches of Power.
و تو بخش‌های مختلف خب این رو به هیئت حل اختلاف ارجاع دادن که اونها هم تصمیم گیری کردن.
On the 1st of July 2012, Iran's Minister of Economy announced that the price of fuel would not be going up in the second phase. Instead, he said, the government plans to gather information regarding the economy and people's financial status. Another goal will be to make sure subsidies are really spent where they're needed. But Western media claims the decision was made because of the economic sanctions imposed by Western nations on Iran.
همین تحریم‌ها باعث شده که درآمدهای نفتی ما افزایش پیدا بکنه. شما نگاه بکنید از زمانی که اتحادیه اروپا.
The sanctions have increased our oil revenues. Since early 2012, when European Union announced an embargo on Iranian oil exports starting in July, both the price of Iranian oil and the exports volume have gone up. That's a fact. And according to the International Monetary Fund, in 2011, Iran's oil revenues were unprecedented. We earned $113 billion from oil sales. So that goes to show sanctions aren't all that bad for us, at least as far as oil sales. It's true that the sanctions have created problems for us, such as economic instability, goods procurement, or in what's referred to as market balance. They've also helped marginal market and fake financial markets to thrive. But the fact is, we shouldn't put all the blame on the sanctions.
ولی واقعیت این است که تقصیرها رو نباید به گردن تحریم‌ها بندازیم.
Mr. Iravani, a former minister of economy, says Western media downplay Iran's achievements by distorting Iran's economic news and putting a negative spin on them.
اگه ما تو 180 کشور جهان تو یه چیزی 160 بشیم،
if we come 160th in something among 180 countries, they criticize us for ranking so low. And when we come 100th, they won't say Iran ranked 100th among 180 countries. Instead, they say Iran ranked last among 100 nations. And same if we rank 20th among 20 countries. You see, that's how they deliberately misrepresent the facts.
اگرم دوم بشیم میگن تو دو تا کشور آخر شده. این یه نوع سیاه‌نمایی آمدانه است، اینا در اتفاقی نیست.
In the first phase of the reform, the government gave everyone, whether rich or poor, the same amount of compensation. But in this phase, it wants to stop giving the wealthy bracket cash handouts altogether and distribute that money among the needy.
What the minister said about data collection, their aim was, as far as they could, to cut off those who don't really need compensation. And that's the right thing to do. I've always supported it. We should ask people who are well-to-do to voluntarily announce they don't need the monthly cash handouts.
کنار برند.
بهترین کار این است که ما گروه‌هایی رو که به نحو مشخص بدون حمایت دولت.
The best thing to do is for us to identify people who'd fall onto hard times without the support of the government and to support them more than we do now in order for justice to prevail. As far as other households, we need to take other measures to support them, such as unemployment benefits for people who lose their jobs because the company they work for goes bankrupt or downsizes. We should also put mechanisms in place to support those facing hardship in meeting their health and education expenses because of the price hikes.
ما بتونیم مکانیزم‌هایی رو برای حمایت هدفمند در حوزه آموزش و بهداشت و درمان تعبیه بکنیم.
The hope is that this will help close the gap between rich and poor and bring Iran closer to what President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad was promising in the beginning when he spoke of social justice. To do so, the government needs detailed information about the income and assets of every Iranian citizen.
The government would have eventually realized that it has to complete its information database. And the reason is that the government is making cash payments to 75 million people now. But they say the figure is around 70 million. That's a far cry from the original plan. if we put 7.5 million people in each tier with giving cash handouts to some 8 tiers, while we'd originally planned to support the 5 or 6 tiers at the bottom of the hierarchy to narrow the gap between them and those above. But, as I said earlier, because of the defective database, we ended up here.
ساختار اطلاعاتی غلط بوده به این فضا رسیدن.
The information the government needs has to come from the banking and tax systems and all the Iranian organizations that provide government statistics.
به نظر من در بحث اطلاعات اقتصادی
Because of its structural problems, Iran's economy is weak at collecting data. There is a lack of a high economic information center that can coordinate and aggregate data collected by all other households, data collectors, more efficiently and beyond the ministerial level. At the same time, it should be committed to a specific schedule for finishing the economic data collection project. In the third, fourth, and fifth development plans, we've laid great emphasis on reforming the banking and taxation information systems, and also the land and housing data known as the CADAS plan. But because we haven't created the requisite framework, and because of a lack of responsibility for completing the data collection project within a specific time frame, all those information banks remain incomprehensible.
If Iran's information database is compiled, it could even help control inflation by reducing the number of families getting cash handouts, which in turn will reduce liquidity in the country. Some experts say what Iran needs now is for inflation rates to stop rising.
I think if the government reformed the household information bank and limited cash payments to families and instead injected the proceeds from the implementation of the subsidy law into the national economy, in other words, if it boosted the production industry by decreasing production costs and limited cash payments to households, it could contain the current inflationary situation.
What everyone agrees on is that despite the hurdles associated with subsidy reform, the process of weaning the country off them must continue.
What's important is that the targeted subsidy plan should not be stopped because we've paid a hefty price since we started it. If we hadn't launched the plan, we'd never had experienced the forex shock of last winter. Because of that foreign exchange shock, the energy prices here now are the same as those before launching the targeted subsidies plan when you compare them with energy prices internationally. And in order to narrow the gap between these two, we'll have to insist on continuing with the plan until its goals, until the targets that the designers of the plan had in mind are realized.
I think the government has to launch the second phase, keeping an eye out for some important issues, such as supporting the production sector, helping with getting financial help from banks, and in return, demanding that the production industry modernize technologically.
برای بخش تولید فراهم بکنه از ضروریاتی است که من فکر می‌کنم که باید انجام بشه.
The most tangible effect of subsidy reform has been the increase of the Iranian cost of living. The parliament has given the government the power to control the intensity of the situation, and in line with that, the government has decided it must postpone the second phase of subsidy reform. Now everything's in motion, nothing can stop the reforms, but it's the government's duty to reduce the pressure economic overhaul threatens the people with.